Well, welcome back, everyone, for part two. And I'm just it's in my pocket. I'm thinking I've got a note here somewhere. So I guess to start today, we thought we might just very briefly recap last week, just for those who weren't here. And so last week we started, this series called Home, A Light for Our World, and really exploring how our homes are called to be the place for the new evangelization. That in the early church, the way that the gospel and the good news spread for most of the first four centuries in a hostile Roman environment was through people's homes and people sharing their experiences of faith in the home. And we know from the early church writings and the scriptures that, you know, the Catholic home took on a certain sort of characteristic that became a real witness to Christ alive in the world today. And we think that that's the future of our church as well in today's society, is that we want to build homes that are incredible witnesses to Christ's love for us. And we looked at two particular characteristics at the beginning of in the first session. And so the first one, or one of them, was diaconia, which was really about, they were homes of deep service, and that we're called to be, have homes of service to humanity and to reaching out to people in need. There was and we do that because Christ does that, because Christ is a servant for us. There's a beautiful, I was really challenged in today's gospel, and I mean, maybe this is old hat for you, but I sort of heard today's gospel in a kind of a different way, and I really kind of felt what I often hear young people say today, and I hear Caleb, our son, say this particularly fairly regularly, the kind of the wait what moment. You know, like sometimes you hear young people go, wait what? Like this. And I really heard that in today's gospel, when Jesus is talking about the servants, and he says this, "See that you are dressed for action and have your lamps lit. Be like men waiting for their master to return from the wedding feast, ready to open the door as soon as he comes back and knocks. Happy those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. I tell you solemnly," so this is the bit where Jesus goes, you know, this seriously, guys, he says, "he," the master, "will put on an apron, sit them down at table," the servants, "and wait on them." And I'm thinking, like, everyone who listened to that must have gone, wait, what? Like, you know, these servants have been faithful and waiting the whole time, and when the master finally gets home, he's going to put on an apron, sit them down at table and serve them. It must have been I just kind of think that was a wait what moment, even though I hate it when Caleb uses that phrase. It just, like, you know, that's what it was like for me when I was listening to the gospel today. And so we're called to be those people. We're called to be, you know, Christ at service for the world. The second part was koinonia, and building homes that are places of fellowship, places of communion, that when people come into our homes, they really experience our love for one another, our love and acceptance of one another in an extraordinary way. They go, you know, there's something different about the way these people love one another. I sort of like saw a little bit of that just this week earlier in the week. Some of the young guys share group met and had a sort of a combined share group evening, and we picked up Elijah from there, and just picking him up, and all the guys just, you know, all gathered around the Nintendo PS4 Game Boy thing, Nintendo 64, and playing Mario Kart, and just the joy and the fellowship there, and they were mucking around trying to do something with Mario Kart, and just thinking, you know what, there is something unique about these guys, and just being together, and they're just their joy in one another's company. And I was really thinking through the week that actually sometimes doing koinonia is really hard actually as well, sometimes in our homes. You know, if we have homes where we're living with people who don't share the faith with us, or we're living in a situation where, you know, we have difficult relationships, trying to create a home, a space where we really experience that fellowship, and where anyone who comes in is going to encounter something different, something unique, can be sort of difficult, some challenging to do. And I guess two things that really stood out for me as I was reflecting on that was, I guess, how we're not only called to build koinonia in our own homes, but we're called to help others build that as well. You know, I was thinking about those guys all gathered together in Moses and Justice's home, and how those guys coming together in their home built koinonia there, created an experience of koinonia, that actually we don't just do it in our own homes, we do it in each other's homes when we gather and we love one another that way. And then also sometimes home life is challenging. It is difficult. And I heard a great homily by Archbishop Costello yesterday, and he was really talking about Pope Francis's call for us as disciples of Christ to really be people of healing and people of warmth in today's world. And that, you know, often the first step in building koinonia is actually working towards healing relationships and warmth. And that's something that we can all do, even in our own families, even when we struggle, is really beholding God in the people that we're called to live with. So today we're going to get onto two new things. So, and the first one is liturgia, and then we're going to look at also at didache. And so starting with liturgia, what liturgia means is really worship of God. And so liturgia is a word that comes out of the Greek, and what it actually meant was a public service, a work of public service. And so liturgy in ancient Greece could have been, if you were called up to, you know, just like we have sometimes in some countries, we have sort of public service and you're called to join the army for a period of time. Well, they had public service and you're called to go and act in plays, or you had public service and you're called to recite poetry, and, you know, and that was your expectation that you were to do that. And it was a public expression. And so this is where our word liturgia comes from, right? So it's also the origin of the word liturgy, but really it refers to a public worship of God. And so our homes are also called, the early Christian home was an expression of a public worship of God. So prayer is also really important, but liturgy was a little bit different from that. It wasn't just prayer, it wasn't just our own personal relationship with God, but if you went into a Christian home in the early days, you pretty quickly realize these guys love God. You know, and they live lives that really give God glory and praise. And so the emphasis was really on a communal response to God through word and through symbol and through action in our homes.
So we attended the World Meeting of Families in 2012, I think it was, over in Milan. And part of their theme was work and celebration. Now, they have a whole heap of preparatory material before you go that you're meant to read to prepare for all the catechesis that you receive when you're over there. And part of that was a definition of celebration. It really got us thinking, and I think we've still got, I was just saying to Derek in the car before we arrived, that we still haven't really opened this up fully, and it's a bit exciting to have the time and space now to kind of do it a bit. So the definition that they gave of celebration was a time to humanise work, and in this way, to discover the meaning of human activity.
So we just, there's on the blue page that we just gave you, there is a small quote from one of the preparatory sessions in sort of preparing catechesis sessions for the World Meeting of Families around celebration and work. And we just thought we might just quickly read this. So I've given it out so you can sort of read along with us, but we just thought this is really beautiful in the way that the church sort of contextualizes the importance and the meaning of celebration and joy and worship of God in the busyness of work life and everything else that happens. And so a celebration as free time is lived today in the context of the weekend, which tends to expand more and more and take on characteristics of dispersion and evasion. The particularly agitated time of the weekend stifles the space of Sunday. Instead of rest, diversion is favoured and getting out of the city. And this influences the family, especially if there are adolescent children and young adults. The family has difficulty finding a domestic moment for serenity, for closeness. Sunday loses the family dimension because it's lived out as an individual time rather than a common space. Free time often becomes a movable day and runs the risk of no longer being a fixed day in order to adapt to the demands of work and its organisation. One does not rest just to return to work, but to celebrate. It is very advisable for families to rediscover celebration as a space of encounter with God and reciprocal nearness by creating a family atmosphere. The meaning of everyday toil is to transform our work into a grateful offering in recognition of the gift that has been given to us. Life, one's spouse, one's children, health, work, one's fails, and recoveries in life. Christian freedom consists in man's liberation from work and in work so that he will be free for God and for others. The man and the woman, but especially the family, should include in their lifestyle the meaning of celebration in order to live out not only as subjects in need, but also as a community of encounter. The encounter with God and with others is the heart of the celebration.
And so this really challenges our notion of Sunday being a day of rest, of the Sabbath that we've come to all know. And I often think of Sunday as a day where we're quite busy, actually, but that we take time out, we're a family, and we're doing things together, and we are resting as such. Though it challenges my notion of me, my expectations of having, you know, a book and a cup of tea and sitting at the front and having a bit of time out and it challenges my notions of that. So if we consider Sunday not to be necessarily a day of rest but a day of celebration, what will our Sunday look like? It doesn't necessarily look like, you know, the cup of tea and the book and sitting down and relaxing. It becomes a place, a day of joy, a day of being around people, a day of partying, a day of worship. And this is really exciting because this is what gives me energy, is that celebration. It's that being with people. It's that experiencing the joy. And it takes me through the week. It takes me into the new work week full of hope and full of optimism and full of Christ. And that's really exciting to me. Now, that worship and that joy isn't just meant to be for Sunday, obviously. We know that. It's meant to be part of every single day, that sense of worship. So worship is aligning our hearts with His heart, our thoughts to His thoughts, our will to His will. And we really want to look at how do we do that in the home? How do we bring this sense of worship, this sense of Sabbath rest or celebration, if we want to look at it in a different way? How do we do this in our home?
So I think one of the first ways that we can do that is by really learning how to behold. So this is a word that Mario has used a few times over recent weeks, but learning how to really behold God at work first. I mean, to really give God worship and give God glory and give God our gratitude, we have to be able to actually see where He's at work. And so the way we do that is really by beholding, actually sort of opening ourselves up to encountering the work of God in our life and recognizing that and acknowledging it. You know, whether that's in nature when we see a beautiful day like today or a tree or something, you kind of go, wow, thanks God for this moment. Whether it's opening ourselves up to sort of moments, little encounters, and particularly people. And I think, you know, we really turn that appreciation of someone into worship when we actually name it, you know, when we actually say, you know what, I really, you know, really thank God for the gift of you in my life. You know, that suddenly turns an appreciation of someone into worship as well, right? An encounter with worship and bringing God into the experience too.
We can worship God through our words and thoughts, and I think this is particularly apt at home and particularly for me with a bunch of kids. My words often aren't all that kind and all that gentle. They can be pretty harsh and pretty loud sometimes. And so it's a challenge to really worship God by what comes out of our mouths, by the thoughts that we think and also what comes out of our mouths. I know that over the years the kids go through phases, and you know, when we're in the back chat phase and you know they're being a bit narky to each other, I stick up a poster which is now pretty permanent on our wall, and it says it's an acronym of THINK, and it says and so it's a reflection on what they're saying. Is it T for true? Is what they're saying H for helpful? Is it I for inspiring? Is it N for necessary, and is it K for kind? And if the answer is no to any of those, then I ask them to maybe take it back, apologise, or not say it. And this has really helped me, actually, probably more than the kids, to really think about what's coming out of my mouth, and is this a reflection in our home of worshipping God, or is it a reflection of my own sinfulness? Another area that I think is really pertinent in our church, and we're really blessed to have the depth of wisdom in our church that I think many other churches don't necessarily have, is being worshipping in our suffering. So having a look at the times in our lives, I think in today's society there's a lack of understanding that we need to suffer to actually experience joy, that there's a... Suffering is good. It's okay. We can get through it. It's often society often thinks that we, you know, if I'm not happy, then that's it, I'll just give that away. Or, you know, if I'm not happy in my relationship, it's the other person's fault. So, you know, he can just go and I'll be by myself and I'll be happy then. And there's this constant search for happiness. But I think the wisdom of our faith gives us an understanding that suffering actually leads to something even better than happiness. It leads to a true joy. And I think that's something we need to share with the world. I think it's something that's really lacking in our world today and something that we need to share. And I've been reading a book by Darling, and I don't know how to say her last name, Schleck. And so she wrote a few of the Hillsong songs. Shout to the Lord, I think, is one of them. Sorry, I didn't mark the page. And it's a good book. I don't know if I'd recommend it, but I'm enjoying it. And there was a quote from Rick Warren in it. And it says, "Your most profound and intimate experiences of worship will likely be in your darkest days, when your heart is broken, when you feel abandoned, when you're out of options, when the pain is great and you turn to God alone." And I think, thanks, man. I think that's the type of worship we really need to open ourselves up to sharing with others, that people need to see us worshipping when things are really hard, when we're at our rock bottom and we can still say, God, this is yours and I live for your glory and this is for your glory and your glory alone. And I think it's a way of us being really authentic disciples of Jesus, that we're not just praising God when our life is perfect and everything's happy and we're smiling, that we're actually able to find joy in our suffering, that we're able to worship in the darkest parts of our lives. And another way we can worship in the home is through the atmosphere of our home. And I know there's many families here who are more wise than us in this area. When I was young, my nan's lived in the same house since they migrated over from India in Morley. And so we've been going to that house all my life. And in the corner of her living room, she has a statue of Our Lady. And Our Lady's only about that big. But she sits on a wooden log thing that stands up. And it's just been there throughout my whole childhood. She's just been sitting there in the corner of the lounge room in a place of honour. And whenever I'd bring something that I'd made as a child, a little, drawing or a picture or a little felt, I've gotten to sewing little felt creatures and all sorts of things, I'd bring it to my nan and say, you know, here's a gift for you. And she'd take it and she'd be really happy. And then she'd place it at the foot of Our Lady. She'd place it on this log thing. She'd hang it up or she'd put it there. And every time I'd give her something, she would just place it at the foot of Our Lady. And it really brought home to me this place being a place that Christ is the centre of, that no matter what goes on there, the arguments that happened and the, you know, and the naughtiness that we got up to, that this was always the centre of this home. And it was a real witness to me. I think it was a spark for my Marian devotion later on in life, and a really beautiful thing. And there's still little felt hearts that's got lace around it that I sewed when I was like 8 or something, still sitting there today. So, so it's really important to make prayer spaces in our homes. I know ours goes through various seasons with the liturgical calendar, but also with the ages of our children. So usually it's a little, I don't know, a little like chest of drawer thing. And it's got the colour of the liturgical year, liturgical season on as a tablecloth. And then I've often got statues that may or may not get changed very often, depending on what we're doing. But it's meant to draw the children and draw me into a place of worship, a place of holiness, a place of sacredness that we can reflect on. I just put the liturgical calendar up. So we try to follow this. We do it as best we can, but that's often quite imperfect and quite sporadic. Okay, rituals. So rituals are really important in developing a place of worship in the home. Things like grace and at mealtimes, things like morning prayer, things like evening prayer, and what you do when children go to sleep, or what you do as a couple, or even as a single person when you're going to bed, are really important in developing that sense of worship in your home.
I think even just little rituals. So, one of the things, for instance, that we always do in our car, and maybe some of you do this, is if we pass a police car or a fire truck or an ambulance when we're driving somewhere, we always make the sign of the cross in our car, our family, and we just, you know, like wherever that vehicle is going, there's a challenge there, you know, something really difficult. And we just ask, you know, God's grace, just be there and bring your peace, you know, the peace of Christ or whatever it is, the challenge that those people are going to be facing. And they're just little tiny rituals, but they give witness to God and his importance in our lives. One of the things I really love is Celtic spirituality, and so in Celtic Catholic spirituality, there is this beautiful idea of just giving praise to God in all circumstances, regardless of whatever is happening in every moment, from the minute you wake up to the time you go to bed, just bringing God into every part of it. And they have so many beautiful little prayers, like, you know, if they were you know, lighting the fire at the beginning of the day, it'd be like, you know, God, thanks for this, you know, fire that makes me warm. If they're doing the dishes, like, you know, thanks God for giving a chance to, you know, take this dirty thing and make it clean, like you do with my own life, you know. Or if it's a rainy day, wow, God, thanks for this rain that's nourishing the earth. And if it's a sunny day, oh, thanks God for this sunny day that's, you know, helping things to grow. And they would just find a way of just giving praise constantly in everything they do, in every moment, you know, to really thank God for his work in their life. And I think when we just do that, we make that a part of our life, you know, people bear witness to that. It really speaks to them deeply of our relationship with God and how important he's in our lives. So we're going to give you just a couple of minutes to have a quick brainstorm. So we'd like to, maybe if you just get into small groups of say 4 or 5 people, and we've got a couple of questions up there. So the first one is, how is our home currently set up as a place of worship? So I'm sure almost everyone in here probably has some things that they do that make their home a place of worship. And what other practical changes could we make to better glorify God through our home? So we're just, because we go short on time, 2 minutes, so just quickly find a couple of people sitting next to you and just take a moment to share with them just a few of your own thoughts about what you do in your own home or what you could do. Okay, so maybe I'm just curious, was there any particular things that you may have heard in your share group that you thought, wow, that's a really good idea? That's a great example of liturgy, how, you know, we could worship God in our home in a way that maybe other people might encounter. Any ideas, any thoughts? Josh?
It may not be really obvious to say walking in as a spiritual person, but you know, our family uses blessings just to house bless. So that's a good start, I suppose.
Right, yeah, blessing the home, absolutely. Yeah, great way. We had a blessing in my office for our new agency a couple of weeks ago, and lots of people said, you know, it was just so lovely to be invited into that space and to be a part of that blessing, and that experience really spoke to them. Any other ideas?
We discussed that instead of having places, I would discuss with my own room being a place for me and me alone, where I can kind of have my own time. But instead of that, have it that it's for me and God. So that way it's personalized between me and him. And then that way, you're not just kind of being selfish, and you're bringing God into every point when you're alone and when you're with people.
Great, I love that. It really speaks to that sort of, to me, that quote about that celebration that, you know, we often think about, I need my space. Like, you know, where's my space? And kind of going, you know, actually, I need my space with God, and like inviting God to be a part of our personal space as well. Thank you. Maddie?
I was just saying, you talked about rituals that you had. When the kids were little, we used to go into their rooms and we'd pray with them before they'd go to sleep. And then when they became teenagers, they sort of went, anyway, when we wouldn't do it, they'd say, oh, how can you ever come into our bedroom and say prayers? Anyway, when they're young adults, there's no way they want to anywhere near them. But I was just actually thinking, yes, they go to bed afterwards. But I actually thought, you know what? I should actually still go into their rooms before I go to bed and actually pray over their bed, even though they're not in it at that time, just to sort of say, that's a powerful ritual, isn't it? To pray a blessing over them, even though they're not in it. You know, like,
right. If they're not in their beds.
Yeah, we
sometimes do it. So we go in once the kids are asleep and we'll pray over them, particularly if they're sick or something, like there's gastro or something with being at home. I find it's a real time when we can behold them. Like you watch a sleeping child and it's different than when they're awake. They're somehow peaceful, more peaceful and more calm and more able to be loved than an awake child. And sometimes, we don't do it so much anymore, but sometimes if I sneak into the room, like if the teenagers are sleeping, it's a time where you can kind of just go, oh, you know, and behold them. And I think that's worship as well, even if you're not actually praying on them. over them or not over them.
Any other thoughts? I guess two that occur to me. One is I guess just creating space in our home that speaks to others of our relationship with God. Yeah, even something as simple as like a crucifix or an image of Mary. You know, I mean, no one can come into our home and think of that Karen and I don't love Mary, right? There's just, we have so many statues of Mary and you can't give them away, right? So like, you know, like it's been given to us by someone, so it's got to go somewhere. But it's a constant reminder for us, but I think it's a witness to others of our faith. So we want to move on now to, or did you want to talk a little bit about? No. Oh, let's keep going. All right. So we'll get on to Didache. So Didache is really, what Didache means is teaching or training in the way of Christ. So typically what we would sort of think of that as today is catechesis, but also within Didache was this other notion of the kerygma. And so kerygma is another Greek word. And what it really, kerygma, refers to is really the very heart, the very core of the gospel message, right? It's that Christ is the Son of God. He came down to earth to bring us back into communion with him. He died for us. He rose again. And he loves us and is calling us into eternal life. And I guess it's not just a teaching, but it's an experience as well. So the kerygma is not just an understanding it in our head, but it's also understanding the experience of realizing that I've been called into a personal relationship with a God who loves me intimately and knows me personally through his Son, Jesus. And so it's really the heart, the core of the gospel message is the kerygma, and that's a big part of this teaching and training in the way of Christ, the Didache. And I guess the kerygma is distinct from Didache because while the kerygma means, I guess, the initial gospel proclamation that introduces us to the person of Christ, Didache leads us into, I guess, understanding what does that mean in terms of how to live my life as a person in a relationship with Christ? What does that actually mean for the kind of person that I need to be and the way that I should live my life and how I should respond to those who are around me?
And so I don't know if some of you might have heard Sam Clear speak. He spoke a while ago at Central GAV, and he spoke about kerygma and family being the place where kerygma is nurtured, I think of kerygma as falling in love with Christ and developing a relationship with Christ, and that and family is the place where that really happens, that people are led into a falling in love of Jesus. And of course our home is the actual physical place where that happens. And so how can we make our home to a place where people enter and can fall in love with Christ? That's a huge challenge. So Sam Clear was explaining that family is the place where that nurtures kerygma, that falling in love with Christ, and that parish is also meant to be a place that nurtures that kerygma. But the role of schools was to be, particularly Catholic schools, was to be a place where they did the Didache, that they taught the catechesis. They taught the catechism and the doctrines of the church and scripture and things like that. So there was an actual teaching, direct teaching process. Whereas our homes were meant to be a place where we fell in love, and that was meant to be the beginning teachings of a child's education in faith. And I guess that's kind of maybe the root of our problem in society and the schools today, is that the families aren't necessarily nurturing that kerygma anymore. There are families in the system that aren't necessarily even practicing, or even I know families that aren't even Catholic or Christian actually in Catholic schools today. And so the children aren't coming with any knowledge of God, sometimes of Christ, with no falling in love and practicing experience of coming to love God. And so how do we make our homes a place where that everyone can encounter that falling in love of Christ? Because that I think is so crucial. That's missing from our schools. I think schools can do a good job of the catechesis and things like that. But if a child doesn't have a heart for Christ, then the catechesis is just another subject. It's another piece of information that they need to file away somewhere and bring out another time. And so proclaiming the kerygma is essential for the new evangelization. It's how we are going to evangelize. We're going to set the church on fire and the world on fire again.
So we want to have a brainstorm really with you and get you to brainstorm again in your groups, because I guess for me, when I think about all of these different areas, so koinonia, diakonia, liturgia and didache, I think didache is the most challenging. You know, it's almost we can do all the other things, but how do I really, when someone comes into my home, kind of start a conversation about Christ and actually call them into an intentional, you know, like there's that sort of part of you that kind of goes, I don't want to Bible bash them. I don't want to, like, you know, look like I'm sort of like, you know, just proselytizing, you know, but I really would love for them to be able to see what Christ means for me. And so how do we start that conversation? How do we engage in that conversation with people in our homes? Because I think, you know, in a way we can do it in our homes better than maybe any other place that we can do it. It's safer to do it in our homes often than anywhere else, but we've got to work out the way to do it. So some of you maybe have had that experience of starting that conversation with people or beginning to call people into an experience or a relationship with Christ through your home. So we'd like you to just in your small groups have a brief conversation about that, and then maybe we can explore some other ideas about how to do that as well. So the question to discuss is, how can our homes become a place of kerygma where we call people into a relationship with Christ in their own lives? Go. Okay, so I just wonder if there was anything that you've heard in your small group that you thought, wow, that's a great way of sharing the kerygma or engaging someone in the kerygma. Chris. Right. So great idea. So if you're at a meal or you're catching up with someone and something comes up, just saying, can we pray about that? And just, you know, for that person. I think that's one of the other, I had it on my list actually, is just praying with people. You know, often if someone's just saying, look, can we pray with you about that? You know, no one ever says, what? I don't want you praying for me. I don't want God's grace. Like, I've never met anyone say that. And I think, and I love in the prayer to sort of also acknowledge, you know, God, I know that you have a good plan for this person. You know, like calling them into an appreciation that God has a plan and he's at work and he longs for a relationship, inviting them right into the kerygma, you know, through my prayer. Any other ideas? Absolutely, yeah, great. Yeah, thanks, Mark. I had one of those moments, and this is what I would share with someone when I was photocopying the handouts for this talk. The tray in our photocopier at work, when it runs out of paper, it goes straight to the next tray, right? And so I sort of set one print one for one handout, and then I set the next print run. And when I came to and pick up the papers off, I realised that it had switched to the next tray, and the next tray had blue paper in it. And I thought, oh, now half are going to be blue and half are going to be white. And, you know, the point at which it's where the tray one completely emptied and switched over to the blue tray was exactly at the changeover of the handouts. So there were no handouts that were half one color and half the other color. They were all one color or all the other color. I thought, all right, God, I know you're here, right? You know, but just sharing a story like that is inviting someone into the fact that, you know what, hey, I think God's at work in my life. Yep. Any other ideas? Right, living an extraordinary Christian life so that someone actually wants to know why we live this way and ask those sorts of questions and creates the space. Yeah, thank you. Any other ideas? I guess a few of ours are really looking for the opportunities. You know, there are often sort of, you know, just opportunities that sometimes come up where we can just take that moment to speak into someone's life, you know, like when they might be struggling, praying with them or saying, you know what, I think maybe God's got a kind of a better plan for you, you know, can I pray with you? And just sort of inviting them to maybe an openness if they're in that moment to being open to God's work in their life. And just lacing everyday conversations with God language, like, you know, the photocopying and the things that are going on for us and just bringing God into our everyday sort of conversations.
So when the children, when our older children were younger, I did a program with them called the Virtues Project, and a few of you might know, especially the homeschoolers. But and it looked at that, something I really got. So it's I think it was 52 different virtues, and you were you spoke to the children in a teachable moment. So you know, when a situation came up, whether they're fighting or they're upset or whatever came up, you saw it as a teachable moment, a moment where you could call out a virtue that they already had inside them to come to light. So it wasn't so much, you know, if they weren't sharing, it wasn't, you know, don't pull on that toy, you know, it wasn't a don't situation. It was you need to use your generosity to be able to, you know, share or take space and then give them strategies or whatever. But it was really calling them to a virtue. And I find that just changing my language around saying, no, stop, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, to something, to calling them into something that they need to draw out of themselves, whether that be a gift from God or a virtue that they need to bring to the situation, is would really change my mindset a lot as well around disciplining and teaching them how to handle problems and things like that. And we can do that. So we could do that in situations when we're talking to people. Like that was really generous. Just naming a virtue that they've used before. If they've given, I don't know, money to someone or something, and that was really generous of you. That, you know, you've got a really generous spirit. That kind of thing. So calling out a virtue in people when you see it happening. Another way to really encourage a catechesis and a teaching around what we believe is to discuss why we believe what we believe. So discussing what our worldview is, because many people don't understand why the Catholics believe certain things around certain things that we do. So, for example, around contraception, why do we believe life is sacred? Why do we believe that we use natural family planning or and that we stay away from other artificial contraceptions? But being able to explain our worldview and how we see life as sacred and that we value all life and that we see our bodies as places where God dwells, and just really make it simple for them, but just letting them into how we perceive the world, because actually it's a really blessed thing we've got, the way we can see the world.
So we just want to invite Sarah to come up and just share a little bit about her experience of faith in the home. And we have to apologise. We gave Sarah very short notice.
Thank you. All right. Yeah, cool. Hi. This is loud. Karen and Derek said, my name's Sarah. I'm 18 years old and I'm the second oldest of six kids, so when talking about family and stuff like that, I was like, oh, okay, I suit this role, I suit this. Been told to share about experiencing Christ and teaching and worshipping God, like we were, Karen and Derek were talking about, in my family. So being in a family of eight, that is, that's something else. Yeah, and when I was actually asked, which was not long ago, to talk about this, I had to actually stop and think for a moment and be like, oh, when did I experience this in my family? Oh, because we're there's a lot of us and we're all entitled to our own opinions, and we don't mind sharing those opinions with one another, no matter how blunt or loud or direct those opinions be. So that's also cool. So we have a lot of differences, so that can be obviously a challenge. Thinking about it, and I was trying to think, and I was like, when did this happen, because we're all so different, it dawned upon me that it's not necessarily, say, because we don't have like particular rituals, I guess, that like point us towards Christ, because we're a Catholic family, so that's an advantage. So it's not like the big things or like scheduled things and rituals that is where we like truly experience Christ in our family. But it was really just being in a wholesome and like vulnerable, authentic relationship with each other as a family. So an example of this would be, so because there's 8 of us, that's a lot of birthdays in the year. So, and normally as when it's someone's birthday, we'll go out and hang out as a family. So we have like a little Chinese restaurant just down the road from our house, and we'll sometimes go out to dinner and hang out. And after a while, when you get the whole family together, it doesn't happen very often, but when we are able to, we spend quite a bit of time together. We grow very comfortable around each other. And my family's really funny. We all have a pretty good sense of humour. Sarcasm's one of them, but it's great. And it's in those moments of spending time with them is when, and everyone's really joyful and just having a really good time. At some stage, someone will put on some music and we're all just like singing to these like songs and stuff like that. Not everyone's very musical, but we sing anyway. Cool. But it's in those moments of like pure joy and just being present with one another. I feel that is when we truly experience Christ and worshiping and that stuff. And being in relationship with one another, because I purely believe that the relationships we have with other people is a reflection of the relationships we have with God. So, yeah, and in the family as well, because family is the domestic church, so having that as well is also cool. And, yep, I think that's all I've got to say. Cool, thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah, for doing that and doing it at such short notice, because I think really it is, it's absolutely in the relationships, right, that all of that is revealed, right? It's our koinonia, it's our diakonia, it's our didache, it's our liturgy is all revealed in the relationships that we have with one another in our homes. And really, I guess, Karen, I just wanted to finish on this last thought, because us building our homes into a place where people are going to encounter Christ is our Christian imperative. We don't have a choice, right? Like God has said to us, Christ has said to us, go and make disciples of all nations. And the place where we can do it the most easily and the most warmly and with the most love is in our very homes. And if we don't use the gifts that God has given us, such as our home, to do that, then I think that we're really stepping back from actually the call to evangelize. You know, I think often people sort of say, oh, well, I'm not really sure how to evangelize. I don't really know a lot of people. It would be very easy for Karen and I to sort of turn around and say, well, actually, we're pretty comfortable now. We've got plenty of people in our lives, lots of Christian families, people who share the journey with us. You know what? This is kind of easy now. We could sort of step back and kind of just enjoy the ride now and coast, you know? And I think that if we were to do that, we would be turning our back on the call, Christ's call to make disciples of all nations. We all know someone in our workplace, friend, family, school, that we could say, you know what, come over for dinner, or we'd love to have you in our home, we'd love to have you in our space, and to reach out. And I think particularly in today's day and age, those two handouts have some reflections for you to go away, obviously, and think about your own home and how you might develop those two areas. But there's a scripture reflection on the top of both pages, and the one that really speaks to me a lot is this quote from the Gospel of John. And at the very beginning, on the very first slide, we had a picture of a house. You couldn't see it very well. It was one that Nathaniel drew. But I want to finish with this experience of Nathaniel in the Gospel of John. And in the first chapter of John, we hear these words. Philip found Nathaniel and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth? Can anything good come from there?" Nathaniel asked. "Come and see," Philip said. You know, when I hear those words, "Nazareth, can anything good come from there?" I think those words could easily be replaced in this day and age, you know, in a post-Royal Commission era. Someone could easily say, "The Catholic Church? Can anything good come from there? You know, this community? Could anything good come from there?" Well, our response has to be exactly the same as Philip's, and that is, you know what? Come and see. Come and see in my home. come and see in our family. Come and see with the people that I live with and that I love and who love me. Come and encounter Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, Son of God. And so I really hope that as we leave this place today and this afternoon, that we'll maybe really think about those words. You know, maybe we are the new Nazareth and we need to call people into a new encounter. And the simplest way to do that is come and see. Come and see how we love one another. Come and see how we look out for the lost sheep and serve the lost. Come and see the way that we worship God. Come and see the news, the good news that we have to offer in today's day and age. So we finish with prayer. On our slide for Diaconia, there's a picture of Our Lady. And I always, you know, we think about Didache and we think about bringing people into the way of Christ, into an experience of Christ. Well, the very first person ever to do that was Mary. It was through her, yes, that she brought all of humanity into an encounter with Christ. And so I think she's the one who longs to watch over our homes and to guide us and to strengthen us and to intercede for us so that we will take up the mantle and also be the people who bring people, others, into a relationship with Christ. So let's ask Our Lady to be with us. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.